Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. It is August 7th, 2014. You can tell I'm talking kind of like a frog tonight, but a tremendous amount of material to cover, so I will get right into it. The main science topic, I'll be talking about batteries on my ongoing issue with energy of the future. Distributed energy, it is called. It's the safest form of energy. It's the safest form of wealth of any kind, is having it distributed. Just a little aside note, a couple years ago, the Chinese decided that they had tremendous amounts of gold, and so they knew that foreign entities could come in and steal it if it were all in one place. So they encouraged the Chinese people to invest in gold. They guaranteed the price value, and so people all over China invested in a little piece of gold that would maintain its value, thereby diversifying, distributing the wealth of gold. Energy is the same. The problem we have today is that energy comes from a very few sources. There's less than 180 nuclear power plants in the United States, so just very few in the big metropolitan areas, and so they are very vulnerable. But at any rate, this ties in with the first story. San Diego, the San Onofre nuclear reactor, has been shut down for a couple years because of a leak. They had new equipment installed in the reactor transfer case. It was leaking, and so they had to shut it down. Then they collected, over the past couple years, $4.4 billion from people out there who didn't get any electricity from that nuclear reactor, but they are funding a future effort of $4.4 billion over a 20-year span to decommission, dismantle that nuclear reactor near San Diego. Wow, it'll take up to 2019 for the stored spent fuel to cool down to the point where they can stop investing electricity to cool it. Now, so this is not just a cleanup act. They have to continue to cool the nuclear waste there. That's using nuclear reactors from other locations. Clearly, nuclear fuel is a losing concern when you have to continue to spend tremendous amounts of electricity to cool the fuel that comes out of there. Remember that they're using nuclear fuel that they're building today comes from dismantling the American and Russian nuclear arsenals of rockets and bombs. And these reactors, when they were built, were never meant to build to run this high-level, high-octane nuclear fuel. And so the storage problem persists. They're hoping that the federal government can somehow decide what to do with nuclear waste, but in the meantime, they figure by 2019 they can start putting it in dry casks that will not foster fires. Now, these, you know, when one of these babies starts to melt down, it's all over for California. If one of those tanks melts down, or if for some reason they can no longer provide the electricity to cool those tanks up until the 2019 date, it's the end of California as we know it. But anyway, just a disaster. This is Southern Cal Edison. The whole issue of energy in the United States is absolutely absurd. The special interests that had taken it over in the last century and installed these unbelievably treacherous environmental disasters, which are called nuclear power plants, in the waste that's created, they don't know what to do with it. So, at any rate, it's very apropos when I'm talking about getting energy from wind. Wind is a tremendous source of energy, but as I've said before, it is very misused. It has been a boondoggle because the big corporations that fuel the oil industry, the nuclear industry, and the natural gas industry. They have large investments in those, and so the three-blade wind generators, very inefficient, very just they have absolutely no effect on the energy industry, and certainly they're not going to replace the big three. So it's just an absolute disaster. So that's why I'm stepping out and moving forward with a wind system that literally will replace and change wind energy into electrical energy. Then the other thing we have to do is just stop using it. I have personally been experimenting, and I have a very good understanding of energy requirements. Fully one-third of all of the energy in the United States is consumed by light bulbs, by light. How insane when we have LED technology that will bring that way down. The new highly efficient LEDs would last for 30 years. The $6 a light bulb, I just bought some myself, and they're running at about 6 to 8 watts for an equivalent 60-watt light bulb. I won't say where I bought them because I don't want to promote any particular business, but they're out there, they're available. Amazing technology. And so we have to reduce the light consumption. Another third of the electricity is run through three-phase electrical motors. Okay, well, I'm going to jump off that topic because I have a lot of other initial topics to cover here. The sinkhole issue in Russia gets sillier and sillier every day. They're still talking about global warming. Now, understand that Siberia has had a bit of warming in past years, but in this year, it's actually gotten warmer. But these sinkholes, mind you, have been known about for a couple of years. So why all the publicity now? Well, one also has to ask why all the publicity last week, NASA coming out with a story that there was a solar blast that nearly took out Earth, sent us back to the cave ages. But wait a minute, boys and girls, there was no event, and it was 2 years ago, and the sun hasn't been doing anything, so why all the hype? Anyway, it just can't get any sillier in standard science. Okay, but the sinkhole issue, once again, the people who were on site reporting that these are explosive events with heat, the terrain that is blown out from these areas all around the surrounding area is dry and obviously went through some serious heat. They're calling these sinkholes due to permafrost. I mean, the permafrost is everywhere. Why does it come in some little hole? It's so absurd. So obviously what I said a couple of weeks ago is absolutely the correct answer, that these are pockets of natural gas. And when storms move over the area, lightning hits, ignites these, and boom, away they go. There's another thing that's called a pingo, P-I-N-G-O, and these are known about. They are basically uplifted areas of ground, and you can find these around the earth. I mean, there's an explanation on Wikipedia. These are well known, but what we're seeing here are not pingos. They're because what we're seeing here in Russia and Siberia are explosive events that blow the top off. The top is nowhere to be found. It doesn't sink in. When you look down in the hole, ain't nothing there. It ain't a sinkhole, boys and girls. So the sinkhole based on global warming theory that's being pushed, and they always put in fine print at the bottom, oh, but there are competing theories. But what they're pushing is global warming. And let me make a statement right now. I don't care where you are in the U.S. I just talked to some people that are down in the southeastern U.S., the mid-southern U.S., and I know I've been tracking this all over. We are now, 2014, in the coldest summer on record. It started cold, we had a tremendous amount of rain, we had flooding in the Midwest, And now we're into August, and it is already recorded and can't change the coldest August or the coldest summer on record. This goes back, and you know, we're talking about historical records that go back literally hundreds of years, because the British Navy was out and about. Even during the Maunder Minimum, they were out and about around the world. So the issue here is that there's no global warming. And so they're trying, like these other phony stories, are just that. It's the Rothschilds who own the weather industry reporting who are trying to pump up this issue of global warming. And remember that that is one of Obama, the little middle manager from Washington, that's one of his primary soapboxes that he can jump up on and talk about and move the New World Order agenda. By the way, I saw a video this past week, and it is very real, where Obama is saying that over decades they have built up the New World Order, is what he's talking about, and that the average person, this is out of Obama's mouth, he says the common person cannot manage their own affairs. They have to be managed by a single powerful entity above. And that's what these people think. And he said they have to give up their civilian rights to this central power group. And that's how these people think. They're nuts. These people are nutso wacko. And so a listener wrote in, I had mentioned before, take a barbed wire fence or a chain link fence around Washington, D.C., Wall Street. He suggested also parts of Los Angeles and Chicago, other major cities, and call it a prison. And he said, but wait, those people would never go for it because they're the ruling class. And so he said, wait, what we should do is first of all call them closed gated communities and charge them a big price to come in, and then just don't tell them that when they all get settled there and move their furniture and their Mercedes and their BMWs there, that the locks are going to be on the outside. So I thought that was a wonderful suggestion by a listener. But anyway, yeah, the establishment power structure is absolutely bonkers in all upsy-dupsy over themselves. Being the Obama, that guy's a total nutcase, but he's their boy. He's their boy in Washington. Okay, two hurricanes headed towards Hawaii. Julio is the second one. It's on its way in Isel, I believe they call it. Also, let me pull this up, the map now. It's a cell that's going south. Julio, and would be the proper name. But these are headed both towards Hawaii. It looks like Julio is going to head the north of the Hawaiian Islands, probably about a few hundred miles the way it's charted right now, and it's bending more, so it may go farther north than what the current track is stated. That one is still a hurricane. Right now, the storm Isel is weakening beyond to tropical storm status. But here's what I want to mention. And this is going to be happening right kind of as I do this show. So I won't really have the results probably until tomorrow. But let's go back a couple years to a hurricane called Daniel. This was just a number of years ago. I made an announcement on the show when this was tracking towards the island of Hawaii. They were preparing, but the people in Hawaii apparently said, "Well, no, hurricanes never hit Hawaii. Never have hit in history in Hawaii. Although they get the waves, they get the surge, they get all of that." And so I thought, "Well, that's very interesting." So I paid particular attention to Hurricane Daniel. It moved up, coming up very, very, very similar to the track that Isel is taking right now. And when it got to about 50 kilometers away from the southeast edge of the Big Island of Hawaii, it jumped like a lightning bolt. It jumped and it shorted out to a island that's being built. It's a volcanic island that's just under the surface of the island of off the southeast corner of the island of Hawaii, off of the Kilauea volcano. And this is offshore, so it's an island that's just breaking surface offshore, a volcanic island being formed. But it jumped. This Hurricane Daniel jumped about 50 kilometers, just dissipated like in a flash, and within minutes they had a 5.0 earthquake at that same location, and the earthquake was deep. It was like probably 5 kilometers under the ocean level, or under the ground. I mean, that's in the ocean is very shallow there. So we're talking an earthquake, a 5.0 that occurred. So the explanation is that the hurricane, being driven by the electrical current from the ionosphere, as explained in all of my work, shorted out, literally shorted out to the that island. And this happens when hurricanes move into Florida or into the Yucatan or wherever. They hit that coastline, and when they short out, they literally electrically short out, and that's where they lose power, because the energy is no longer going into ionizing the air, bringing it up the draft hole, the eye of the hurricane, and powering that hurricane. Now, if you want a good explanation of this, go to my weather book. That has the best explanation. It's also referred to in my other books. But I got an email from a guy who's a student, and he's in engineering, I believe. In his physics class, he asked the professor how hurricanes form. And according to his report, the professor simply kind of chortled and did not respond. Possibly he was caught in a quagmire. He could give the standard explanation that it's due to warm water, and look like a complete idiot, and he probably knew this student already, had seen my work. Or he could support my work and say that this is caused by electrical currents from the ionosphere, according to James McCanney, who's correct, and then mention and give support to me in the classroom, which is prohibited. He'd probably lose his job for pulling that one. So anyway, okay, but I'm going to watch very intently tonight as the Hurricane Isel is heading up to Hawaii to see if it shorts out. And if not, it would continue. It's on a path to go up over all of the Hawaiian Islands. But once again, as I said, it's diminishing to tropical storm status. But one of the other interesting points here is that all of the bottled water is sold out on the islands. And so what is the very first thing that people think of? You know, go buy bottled water. Why wouldn't they plan, you know, and buy a water filter? That's what I sell in my webpage. The sales page, I have the best water filter systems on the planet, plus a pre-filter if you have disaster water. You can pre-filter it, put it into your filter system, and end up with water that's cleaner than you would get out of the tap. In fact, everybody should be filtering their tap water. Oh my goodness, if you knew what was in that water, it would make you throw up. So anyway, check out my webpage, and remember that this commercial-free radio show comes to you from the sales that are made on my webpage. So if you want to support me, a little effort there, that is always wonderful. But on to the next topic. I want to touch this topic first, because I don't want to miss it. A water crisis in Ohio. This is absolutely insane. Ohio is being kind of targeted, I might say. But especially in the region of Ohio, and it certainly is in the surrounding states, there's an algae that is producing a very poisonous I don't know what you'd call it, like it's byproduct, but it's in the water, and the people are not being told about it. It's a big quagmire between the state official, the EPA of Ohio, and the federal EPA, and so nobody's talking about this. And people are drinking the water and getting sick. Some people are actually dying from this, are the reports that I've gotten, and nobody is talking about it. But you can find this online if you want to find more about this, but it's just absolutely insane. Once again, my water filters would take care of this issue. And in fact, with everything that's going on today with the Ebola coming into this country, or the alleged Ebola, whatever it is, you should have your own water filtration system. I mean, it's just not having it is insane. But, okay, on to the next topic. 1.2 billion passwords are stolen by Russian hackers. And I got a kick out of the article I saw. I forget where it was, one of the standard news, phony baloney, schmooze news outlets on the Internet. And they said, but don't worry, they're not really doing anything with financials. They're not. They had access to credit card information, but they're not using it. What they're doing is simply sending out phony emails to people to try and get them to buy phony products to make money. And I thought, well, gee, isn't that great? Isn't that much better than them stealing your financial information? But the same company that discovered this, I can't remember, I think it's called Holds Company, they're out of Wisconsin, discovered an issue with an Adobe product about a month ago in which millions of credit card, encrypted credit card databases were compromised. And they were also the ones who discovered that. But if on this whole topic, it's very clear that my book, my most recent book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, that's Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, only available in ebook format, which you get, by the way, you get that free. And my second most recent ebook is called Water, dealing with the ownership of water in the world, who's doing it, etc. You get both those books free with any water filter product purchase from my webpage. But this ongoing, the hacking and the infiltration of databases, it's just rampant now. And my book talks about this, what's going on. The companies are still using the RSA codes, the public key encryption method of encryption and firewall protection, and those are so easily broken, it's like child play. So this is going to keep going on, unbelievable. And by the way, I just want to mention with my own secure web ordering page, when you order from me, I don't have the web page. You go to my web page, my ordering page, and this is the way it should be. You go to my webpage, you select your items off of my page, and when you hit the order button, you go off. It looks like you're going to another subpage, but you're actually going off to Visa itself. And you're being processed by Visa or MasterCard, whatever your processor is. And I don't maintain that information. I don't have any record of it. I never see it. It's processed, and then minutes later, you get an email, and I get an email saying that the sale has been accomplished, and then the orders are processed. But at any rate, my web ordering page is secure because it's not available to anybody. It literally goes to Visa when it's being processed, so you can feel safe that you're data is not being held in some intermediate database somewhere that somebody can hack into. The Ebola issue is just nuts. There's a lot of good information coming out that, in fact, the Ebola issue was a constructed issue. Just like every couple of years, we had the flu a couple of years ago. Before that, we had the N1H1 flu, or the H1N1, whatever it was, and then We had the SARS, remember that? And this is all conscripted by the WHO, the World Health Organization, and the Center for Disease Control, the CDC in Atlanta, Georgia. And these organizations are clearly funded and operated by Big Pharma. This is to get people out to take shots, to get pharmaceuticals, and to bolster the sales of certain products. I just want to mention something that happened here over the past weeks. I was invited to be on a radio show as a guest, a new show I'd never been on before, and it looked like a very good fit. So I communicated with the host, and who has a show that deals with historical analysis and how history has been changed. That's a topic that I deal extensively with in my in all of my work, the history of the world, just world history, and the human race, etc. And so anyway, I got to the point where I was going to reply and set up a time to be on this show. I go to my email list, and all of the emails from this person are gone. So I get a hold of an intermediary person who actually introduced us, who was a fan listener of that person, host, and a fan listener of me. And so I said, hey, strangely enough, my emails have been erased, and could you please get us in contact again? So he emails the guy who's the host of the other show and says that all his emails coming from me were erased out of his email bank. I just thought I'd pass that on to my listener base. Now, I mentioned that to John Moore offline, and John Moore goes, yeah, he says, well, you know, the only people that have that kind of capability is the government. He said, obviously, somebody does not want you talking to this guy, or certainly not being on his radio show. So at any rate, just wanted to let you know about that little incident. Japan, oh my goodness. Now let's backtrack a little bit. After World War II, Japan, by the alliance, the treaty that was signed in Geneva, actually it may have been signed in Tokyo, at least the officially declared that they lost the war. After the two nuclear bombings, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan was forbidden to ever develop a military ever again. Now, today, Japan is announcing a military presence in outer space to monitor outer space. They call it the Fourth Battlefield. They're doing this in conjunction with the United States, and they say they're going to share all the information with the United States. Well, that's a happy relationship, except it could end at any time if, for some reason, relations between Japan or some other third foreign nation that's strategic to Japan, if we come into some kind of conflict in the way the U.S. does things, that probably will take about a New York second to happen. But at any rate, Japan announcing its military presence in space. Okay, now here's a story that I'm sure you've all been drumrolled waiting for. The Rosetta Comet mission has finally made its announcement. Now, this is really strange because they actually arrived at the comet last May, but they're putting out the announcement. The official announcement actually came out August 3rd, stating that they had arrived in orbit, 100-kilometer orbit, around the comet nucleus. The nucleus is relatively small, but when they were obviously in orbit, a little bit larger orbit, but still an orbit around the comet, it's called, let me read this because it's very difficult to pronounce, it's called Comet 67P Churyumov Gerasimenko, and they call it Chury for short, Comet Chury. But at any rate, this comet is like somewhat potato-shaped, but with more exaggerated in the middle. It's like two lobes hooked together. and pitted. It's the typical comet-looking nucleus that we have seen, but there ain't no water. There ain't no ice. There's nothing. And so it's very humorous in the release, both on the European Space Agency webpage and on the news release. They never say little icy wanderer. They never say dirty snowball. They never make any mention other than they do make a statement about production rate of water. They're talking about 300 milliliters per second, which is a very small amount of water. But when you're at a distance, the comet is producing a very visible comet tail from Earth. But when you get right up to the nucleus, there's nothing coming off the nucleus. They have sensitive equipment. They have, you know, designed this spacecraft to look at a comet nucleus and see its activity. And boys and girls, like I said, drum roll, da-da-da-da-da-da. No ice, no water, no snow on the comet nucleus at all. It's a hotter than average dry rock. And there's nothing coming off of it to form the tail. Gee. Now, how could this be? Now, this isn't the first time we've had the, remember, the, what is it, 2005, the Deep Impact mission to Comet Tempel 1. I was on the Coast to Coast AM radio show. It was July 4th, 2005. We were waiting on the show for the live presentation by NASA of the data, which they have been pre-announcing for years, July 4th, and was supposed to be this big international extravaganza display of data, and they didn't release any. And so it was months later, I went back on Coast to Coast when they finally released it, and there was no ice or water or snow. It was like 0.004% of the surface had any inkling of vapor of water, and nothing was coming off of that area. There was no tail activity or gushing or any of this. So, you know, obviously I'm correct about comet nuclei, and the entire plasma discharge comet model is correct. Now, what they are saying is that as this comet approaches the sun, by the way, it's in a region between Mars and Jupiter. The orbit of this comet is like a 6.5-year orbit. It goes out beyond the orbit of Jupiter. Then it comes in to an inner part of the solar system and then goes back out. So it's on kind of an elliptical orbit, but right now it's between Mars and Jupiter in a region where it is active. You can see the comet tail from Earth. It's not a big deal. And there, the pictures from the Rosetta spacecraft, also as they were taking pictures of the comet moving in last spring, as they were moving in closer to the comet, you could see the comet activity, the water tail, the dust tail, etc., and the what they call the plasma tail, which is really the electrical discharge passing all the way through the comet region of the nucleus and beyond. That is the linear electrical discharge, the discharge of the solar capacitor by that nucleus. And so clearly I am correct about these comets, but these agencies just won't give up the ghost, because you got to know that their money that comes from the Gov, and the Gov wants them to talk about dirty snowballs. That's a very, very important part of their disinformation science campaign. For me to be declared correct would be an absolute disaster for the world power structure. Because, well, just think what it would mean. Electricity in outer space, why don't we grab some? Why don't we grab some to run our energy systems here on Earth? And that's all truly possible. With the Tesla technology, it would give me notoriety. And also, I'm a very politically outspoken person, dealing with the world political issues, and in fact being very specific about the fact that we have to get rid of the World Bank, the World Banker situation, talking about the government in Washington, which is a puppet of the World Bank, the Federal Reserve is a foreign bank on our soil, on and on and on. So, yeah, to declare that Jim McCaney is correct is probably not in the cards. Yeah, well, I'm not holding my breath, and as one guy used to say, he'd ask me, did I get my Christmas card from NASA this year? And it's like, doggone again, they didn't send me one this year, but I'm hoping for one next year. Okay, so at any rate, they're expecting to land on this comet in November, so we'll keep you posted about that. But what they're also saying is as it moves into the inner solar system, chunks of the surface will break away and expose this snowy ice ball that they think is down underneath. But if you look at this thing, it's clearly a hot, dry rock. And so they're going to have a lot of trouble trying to get into this and drill down into the inner part of this hot, dry rock to find water. There ain't no water in there. And that's because here's what happens. When the water is drawn in on the small comets like this one by electrical forces, water molecules, which are ionized coming in, pick up an electron because there's a sea of electrons around that comet nucleus, picks up an electron, neutralizes it, and then those neutral water ions go floating out in the solar wind out behind. And that's when NASA has put spacecraft out there. They've seen those neutrals. They can see them. They can measure them. But they don't understand that that's not water coming off the comet nucleus. That's the process that's going on. Okay, so anyway, enough of that. Going to head right into the main science topic tonight. Let's see. Okay, so the main science topic I'm going to talk about, energy, electrical energy, and specifically batteries. Now, this is a huge, huge part of the distributed energy system. And let me give you an overall view of this. Starting this week, last week I started with the small end, the user end. This week I'm going to start at the other end, at the big end. Now, let me just preface this by saying the conversion of any source, whether it's coal or nuclear or oil or propane or whatever it is, into electricity is very inefficient. You convert heat. You're dealing with a heat engine with all of these processes, except for wind. Now, wind is a bit different because you're converting an energy directly, a movement energy directly into electrical energy, so you're skipping the heat part of it. That's a huge, important point. All of the other forms of electrical generation create heat, which drive turbines, which drive the electrical generators, the multi-phase electrical generators, which provide you with the 60 cycle. And all of these numbers are very standard in the industry, 3600 RPM cycle on the generators and generating the 60 cycle electricity, 115 volt AC, which they have to maintain. So as the load, as you turn on and off things in your house and everybody else does, and it's all collectively drawing electricity out of the power plants, they have to adjust their load every couple minutes to make sure they're providing enough power to power all of your devices. So it's an intelligent reaction. And as I said, some of the installations are manual, but most of them are automated in that process. And last week I described a governor, which would be on like a small home electrical or generator, like gas power generator, like a Honda or whatever. Okay, so but this week let's start at the big end. Wind energy, if done properly with my system, will generate, now these will be one-for-one replacement of nuclear power plants. A wind generator capable of putting out in the range of 500 megawatts. And converting wind directly. So there, right off the top, you don't have the heat production. Heat production to generate electricity is at best about 25%. So about 75% of the heat that you're generating is wasted right off the top. Now that is converted into electricity and shipped out on high power lines. Another, possibly as much as 50% of that is lost simply delivering it to your house. So you're down to around 12 to 15% of the energy that's actually burned or consumed at the energy plant. About 15% of that actually gets to your house. Now let's turn on an incandescent light bulb. About 95% of that goes off in heat. Remember that if you try and change a light bulb while it's running, it's hot. You have to let it cool down before you can put your hand on it. 95% of an incandescent light bulb, that's the old filament type, and I hope you're not using those still, about 95% of that energy is wasted as heat. So now you have 5% of 15%, you're down to a fraction of 1% of the energy that is burned in the nuclear or in coal or in natural gas or whatever the burning in some of the more remote places. They're burning number two fuel oil or some type of oil to create the electrical energy. Less than 1% of that is actually burned in your light bulb to provide useful light. Most three-phase motors in the world, like I said before, about 30% of the world's energy, electrical energy, is used in the form of three-phase motors. And so, once again, unless the three-phase motor is running at optimal efficiency, at the highest RPM, and with the maximum load on it, that three-phase motor used in industry or wherever else is very inefficient. It's taking a lot of energy to provide that small amount of work that goes into whatever process it's doing, whether it's air conditioning or compressor pumps in a factory or running, let's say, a press or whatever it's doing. So these are the efficiencies, or one might call them the inefficiencies, of the electrical system that we have today. Now, take that same factory, and let's first use the example of solar panels. Okay, solar panels produce an amount of energy. They run it into a battery pack, which stores temporarily the energy. That battery pack stabilizes the DC voltage, which then is converted into AC. That's another conversion factor, which is a loss. And then that is used to run three-phase motors, etc., which is, once again, fairly inefficient. So say you're running air conditioners at a factory or cooling units, which draw a lot of power. Now, instead of solar, let's put a direct drive wind generation assist on the roof. Okay, so now what you're doing is you're putting a wind generator assist on the roof, but this is not some three-blade Mickey Mouse NASA-designed wind generator. This is my design, which is highly efficient, and it has an electrical motor backup so that it maintains a constant RPM that you need. But most of the time, the wind generator would be designed so it could run the full load of the compressors or whatever. Now you're converting wind energy directly at the site. You're not transporting it, and you're not converting it into electricity. You're converting it directly into the work, into a compressor, into a moving part or whatever. And it's in a very efficient way. So part of the distributed electrical network is having on-site wind power, a very low-profile, energetic, highly efficient wind system that directly drives many of the processes in the factory. And, of course, when the wind is not blowing, you use your standard processes to run your machines. But let's go to the global scale, to the national scale. If you can replace, and this is the gold, if you can replace nuclear generators one for one with large, efficient wind generation systems, and now let's do a little bit of overkill. Instead of if there's 170 nuclear generators in the country, we'll build 300 large wind generation systems that will provide much more power than normal, but when they're even at low capacity, at low wind speeds, we'll still be able to run the majority of our economy on wind power. Okay, now this is what drives me crazy, because Obama is about to sell the wind rights, and he's in a big push to do this, to companies that are going to install huge 1.5, these are not huge, they're actually Mickey Mouse small, but tons of them, 1.5 megawatt wind installations offshore, assuring that real, efficient, true wind generation systems will never be able to be installed on these sites. This is just an absolute national disaster, but you have a guy in there who doesn't know anything. He's not a scientist, he's not an engineer. Some guys from the energy industry are pushing him to do this, and you have to understand that energy means control. Control of the world through the Rothschild banking empire is done through energy. So if you look at the major oil corporations and the greedy people who run them and the stupid scientists that work for them who make it all happen, who sell their soul to the devil and don't actually provide a legitimate service to the public. This is the system we have for electric today, and it'll be guaranteed into the far into the future. So the whole point is that the system of electrical energy that we have today, now they're talking about putting in a smart grid. Remember that the main reason for the smart grid is to, they state, is to compensate for the gustiness or the variability of the alternative energy sources. Because for wind, they're gusty, they don't produce energy at a constant rate like a nice nuclear power plant would. But the real main reason for the intelligent grid is to tap into everything you're doing, to be able to monitor the home. Every time you make a piece of toast, they would know about it and be able to monitor that. That is the primary reason for the intelligent grid. If with a real grid setup, they also say that this will save our grid from EMPs, etc. And the reality is once that EMP is detected and the system tries to react, the EMP is already through the system and done its damage. So trying to set it up for an EMP, whether it's solar or nuclear attack or whatever it is absolutely absurd. It's how do you test something like that would even work? And you can't, because on a large scale, you would have to test it in vivo, in literally a live test, and how are you going to test that? So they'd be installing systems that are not testable, not verifiable. But at any rate, all of the reasons for a smart grid, Tesla already had that figured out 100 years ago, how to design a grid system that is self-reacting. And there are electrical components that can stop surges, that break surges. Excuse me. I hope I get through this hour without losing my voice completely. But the inductors, for example, are an electrical component that if you have a DC current, they act like an open wire or a closed circuit, just a wire with no resistance. But as soon as you have a change, the bigger the change in the electrical current, then it produces a magnetic field which blocks the passage of that current. So its electrical resistance goes up very quickly with the change in electrical current, not the electrical current itself. So if, like an EMP or a rapid change comes along, then the electrical component reacts and blocks the surge as it happens. So this is what you would call a dumb component. It's non-intelligent. There's no decision to be made. Like I said, by the time you learn about, just because simply the speed of light, the EMP is coming at you at the speed of light, and the pulse is coming at you at the speed of light. So by the time you detect that and then try and have a decision made in some kind of electronics and react to it and send a response that should be reacted to in some nuclear facility or in some electrical facility, that EMP is going to be passed and long gone and on to the next station. So you have to have dumb, passive components, and Tesla had this all figured out a long time ago. So the diodes, the inductors, the shunts, the transformers, the way they're built, etc., are all part of the electrical grid system, and they're designed to be self-monitoring. So this idea that you can build a smart grid to minimize these problems, we already have a dumb grid that's going to do much better. Okay, so back to the distributed large-scale wind systems. And now all of this, too, you have to understand, would be supported by solar. Now, other countries are investing in solar electrical energy at the site, at the location. So you'll find buildings in foreign countries with large solar arrays installed. And that is very efficient. But you have the problem of few sunny days, when the sun is not shining. You still get a good benefit from them, but they're not... They're not the cure-all. They're not going to solve your problem on a large scale. But all of these systems support each other. What the government should be doing is opening the floodgates, bringing down any tariffs, and creating incentives for solar panels, because they are an important component of a distributed energy system. In fact, I believe that every installation should have both solar and wind to one compensate the other. When the wind isn't blowing, it's maybe a nice sunny day in the summertime, and so your solar panels would be working. The other problem with solar panels is when you have a big array, how do you move that along to get the maximum effect from the sun? It has to track along with the sun. And so there's really not a good way to do that. Solar panels are over the past 20 years really have not gained a lot in efficiency. And that's something else that I'm personally working on, is increasing the efficiency of solar cells. My master's degree thesis at Tulane University, I dealt with solid-state photoconductors. That's what I did in this little, give you a little personal note here. It's one of the areas of expertise that I have. We worked on photoconductors, and the result of my research, we were looking for X-ray photoconductors. In the particular research, it was under the National Institute of Health grant. It was at Tulane University Physics Department. And we were looking for X-ray photoconductors to use in X-ray machines for medical purposes. And the chemical compounds that I was using and developing resulted in an excellent photo, visible light photo conductor, which eventually was transferred to IBM and is the basis of the IBM copy machines. So anyway, that's a little unknown bit of history. But of course, as a grad student, I got a handshake. I got a handshake for that. But the point is, that's an area of expertise that I have in my background. So one of my goals is to work on the increased efficiency of solar panels. And so that is, you wonder what I do in my background time. I don't sit here and think about comets. That work has pretty much been nailed down and solidified. I'm off working on new items that are important to the future of the world, in this case, energy. So, and we have to move to this distributive energy system in which wind, which doesn't burn anything, it takes energy that's already there, converts it into heat, and what does heat do? It creates wind again. So once the energy is used, it goes back into the environment, but we're not polluting the environment with heat or other chemicals or radiation or whatever. Wind is blows day and night. We have abundance of wind, and we know how to transfer this energy at high voltage around from one place to another. We can transfer energy from Los Angeles to New York, or from New York to Los Angeles, and vice versa, or from Oregon to Florida, or Florida to Oregon, depending on where the wind is blowing. And so the issue is we have a distributed out in the plain states. There are places where it's known that the winds are higher. And so if we have a sufficient, instead of having this dinky little three-blade systems that produce 1.5 megawatts and trying to put thousands of these around, which don't do anything except annoy the power plant operators, if we had a real system in which we produced more energy than what we needed, then we could cut back, phase back the production, and we would meet our energy needs. This is the kind of system that I envision. And so the whole idea of distributed power, the other part of this is to have battery storage in the homes. And that was the point of my lecture this week. In fact, I'm just starting to get to it now. But to store energy in the houses. Now, there are fuel cells. NASA's been using fuel cells for years. There's a new battery on the market that's actually being used. It's a water battery. What more practical use of water could you imagine than in a battery? So you would have a unit in your house, a battery storage unit of some, fairly decent modern technology, where you could store enough energy for maybe a couple days' use before the power company, say the wind was low or something all over. You would still have enough energy to use. And I am 15 seconds to go in this show. Just a quick announcement. The 10% sale that is on my webpage is going to end this Sunday, for sure. So no more 10% off. You can go to the webpage. Summer doldrums are over, and we're heading into the fall season. So if you want those 10% savings, get there before midnight Sunday. And remember to go to my webpage, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo, 7 letters, JMCCSEI.com. And like I say, your purchases of books, water filters, the Recalendar Sun Star Clock, whatever, support this show. Thank you, and we'll talk to you next week. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.